Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hockey fans. Welcome to the Hockey Podcast. This is Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa, my host. We're here to talk about the Stanley Cup Final. Chris, welcome to the show, sir. Good day to you.
Good day to you. Nice and smooth.
Not too shabby. Sure beats how I brought us in last time. I was still trying to figure out what to do with this studio interface they have for us. And so far, so good this time. We have a pretty special guest here today, old friend of the show, Dana Lane, is going to be calling in to join us. And we'll get the Vegas perspective on what went down in games one and two. But before we get to Dana, what did you think of last night? And give me an overall view of what you saw so far in the first two games.
I'll give you three quick points. First two, which really also from last night. One, the Penguins are dictating the play. Other than the second period of game one, they are totally dictating play. The Sharks have had moments, but the Pens have been in control of these games. Two, I don't think it was talked enough about before the start of the series. We all knew that Pittsburgh has been great at blocking shots, but unlike a lot of other teams in the past who are great at that, they usually block the shots to stop an offensive chance. The Penguins block a shot and get control of the puck, and then they go from defense to offense in the blink of an eyelash, and they're off to the races with their speed. And then three for me, you know, someone might say, hey, look, I know the Sharks are down. Now they go home. They get a chance to hold serve. Let's keep in mind, even though the Penguins have been much better, we've had 2 1-goal games, one go to overtime. So this can turn around very quickly. And I understand that perspective. But I would also warn them, from what I've seen in the first two games, is Martin Jones has been spectacular. And those first two games easily could have been 5-2, 4-1, one-sided affairs. So,
I agree,
you know,
100%.
The Sharks have to go home and hold serve. They got to win games three and four. Otherwise, we could be looking at a short series, which I never thought would happen.
Well, let me go to the phone line. It looks like we got Dana in here. Dana, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, man?
We're doing good. We're doing good. Old friend of the show joins us now, Dana Lane from Dana Lane Sports. One of the best sports information services we have here in Las Vegas. He also has joined our friend Ken Belke over at Sin Bin Vegas. He's the co-host on that podcast now. And if you've been paying attention to him at Dana Lane Sports on Twitter, he's been doing almost every radio show and podcast that he can get his hands on. So if you want some of the best sports information, make sure you follow Dana at Dana Lane Sports. So, sir, if I'm looking at this correctly, the teams that go up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Final, it's happened 291 times. The team on the losing end of that has only come back to win the series 37 times.
Oh,
so give me a reason, if you can, why there's still value on San Jose in this series.
Well, I can tell you this. The bookmakers think there's value on San Jose. They opened up a minus $1.35 for game three, and the bettors are all over San Jose so far. You can't get anything. Well, there's one line under $1.40, but that's been bet up to right around $1.45, and I see $1.50 as well. Hey, look, I don't know. You know, for me, you take a look at the first 30 minutes of both of these first two games, and there was no doubt who was the better of the team. It seems like it takes San Jose about 1.5 to 2 periods to make adjustments to be able to counter their speed. They have not been able to force a ton of Penguin turnovers in the first half of games, and they started to do that a little bit more in the second half and apply some pressure. But, you know, I just don't know. You know, speed usually wins, and great goaltending wins, and I think that they're getting pretty good goaltending out of Matt Murray, although we know that the Sharks have hit a ton of pipes, and especially in game two. So the scores could be, you know, an inch here, inch there. The scores could be completely different. But I think just to the naked eye, even if you didn't know what the scores were, Pittsburgh has a definitive edge on the ice.
So going into this, into the final, I heard a lot of people talking about San Jose had too much speed for the heavier checking teams in the West. That's how they were able to pretty handily erase the Kings and then move past second round, and their speed was too much for the heavier game of St. Louis in the long run there in the Western Conference Final. How has Pittsburgh flipped the script there and used their speed to not only neutralize San Jose's speed, but like you just said, just pretty much track meet right past them. And I think they're out shooting them at almost 2-1 rate here in the final. And that's almost unheard of too. How's Pittsburgh been able to take away that advantage that seemed going into the series might have been with San Jose?
Well, the only thing that I thought San Jose was a little bit better at than Pittsburgh wasn't necessarily the speed, but what they did really well going into that series was get themselves in a position to have offensive success. And meaning, and we see Pittsburgh doing it in this series to San Jose, meaning just, you know, you hear somebody say, well, they're a better skating team. Well, what does a better skating team mean? Well, to me, it means, are you getting, it's just like in, kind of like in basketball, are you getting position on your defender to put yourself in a better position to have offensive opportunities? And I thought that they were able to do that against St. Louis and certainly in the earlier rounds of the playoffs. But I think Pittsburgh has turned the tables on that. So not only are they the faster team, but I think that they're in better position most of the time as well. But again, on the flip side of that, in the third period, I thought San Jose pretty much had the better of those chances. You saw their offensive opportunities come from inside a lot more, whereas in the first couple periods, their offensive opportunities came from the perimeter.
Now, one thing I saw, and I saw it in game one, but I wasn't sure where you stood on game two. You did have the under as one of your plays in game one. Did you follow that up in game two as well? Because that to me was – go ahead.
That's okay. No, we didn't play the under in that, but what we did play, we played the under in the first period at 1.5, which cashed. Unfortunately, okay. We also had Pittsburgh in the first period as well, and they weren't able to put a puck past Martin Jones, so that didn't cash in a push. And then we had San Jose for the game. So we were 1-1-1 on game two, but we kind of shied away from the total because, again, I wanted to see what kind of adjustments were going to be made in game two. But fairly certain that Pittsburgh's speed was a good play. Or I'm sorry, fairly certain that they were going to make adjustments at least in the first period, and it was going to be a little bit tighter game than it was in game one.
Now, what I was going to get to on the game one underplay, that's pretty, I got to say, pretty astute on your part giving that out, given the fact that you have a 21-year-old goalie on one side and a goalie who's got his name on the Stanley Cup on the other, but still just a kid making his first run going through the Stanley Cups as the number one goalie for a team. How much did that play into it, if any at all? And then were you still confident enough to turn around and take the under on that, even given the goaltender situation?
Yeah, it didn't make that big of a deal to me. I mean, you look at Matt Murray and his over and under total this year is right about even. It's at 13-13. And in fact, three of his last four starts were the under. And as far as Martin Jones is concerned, he's always been an over goaltender all season long. But I just felt like it was going to be a much more tight checking game. And in fact, I mean, to be completely honest, I didn't think it was going to go under in the manner that it did. I thought that the game would be completely flipped from where it started to where it ended. And I thought that was going to be the opposite of what was going to happen. But these guys, I made the comment that you got a guy like, for Martin Jones has been playing big games all year. And I've seen enough out of Matt Murray to be pretty confident going under. And in fact, though, you know, we see in the playoffs a lot different than we see during the regular season. I talked to Nick Bogdanovich from William Hill and asked him about why we're not seeing a lot of 5.5s in the playoffs. And I know that the general, you know, through history, you won't see a lot of 5s. In fact, you might see some 4.5s on that total. But the reason is clearly the books have not, they still have not evolved in their thinking. And in today's NHL, it is nothing to see 35 to 40 shots on goal during the playoffs. So there's no reason not to have 5.5s out there because the opportunities are plentiful. And plus on top of that, in the playoffs, you're more apt to see not one, but maybe 2 empty net goals at the end. So I always kind of went with the over a little bit, but when it comes to the Stanley Cup finals, I tend to look at the under, especially if you're finally going to give me a 5.5. What we're going to get out of game 3, I'm not real sure yet. We're still going over some stuff. To me, both of these goaltenders had my confidence, and if the books were finally going to put up a 5.5, that's good enough for me, so we went with the under on that.
Let me it looks like I might have lost Chris. Chris, are you there still?
I'm here.
Okay, let me throw it over to Chris. I know he wanted to ask a couple things. Go ahead, Chris.
Sure. Oh, hey, Dana. So have you been a little bit surprised that Brett Burns, Joe Pavelski, and Joe Thornton have been a little too quiet? It seems like Burns has been a little leery of being that super rover due to the Penguin speed.
Yeah, you know, I made the comment after game 1 that I thought you could probably throw Bolasik in there too. And I think because I thought even in that third period yesterday, they started to definitely assert themselves a little bit more. Look, I don't think Burns has played back. I think he is really – I'm not sure everybody trusts everybody else to do their job, not because they're not capable of doing it, but this Penguin team is just – I mean, they are off to the races. Their transition is the best in the NHL for sure. And I think that he feels as if – he looks to me like he's out there trying to do everybody's job, which – and to some, you know, if you're watching him, to some people that might look like he's being tentative, but I feel like he's trying to be out there doing everything because I don't think there's a lot of confidence in everybody else to be able to physically do their job. That's what I took from it.
Interesting.
How do you
but
think?
I'm going to tell you. That's okay. I have to tell you. We've talked all season about who the best defenseman in the National Hockey League is, and it's unfortunate that that Burns doesn't get some more prime time play than he does because we love Doughty. We know he's fantastic, but boy, I'll tell you, it is really difficult for me to kind of go back and think of the regular season, but think that there's somebody better than Burns at this point. He's absolutely phenomenal. He does everything you could ever ask out of a defenseman.
No question about it.
What do you think about game 3, Dana? Obviously, I mean, it's mathematically not a must win for the Sharks, but it's as close as you can get.
Yeah, I'm right now I'm leaning towards the Sharks. I don't love that number. I might advise people to stay away from it. A number still under minus $1.50, which is our comfort level. But if it gets too much over $1.50, which we do see at one location already, I would say lay off of it. But for me personally, I bet this one that was at a little bit over $1.35. So I feel pretty good with the Sharks. They have just got to come out playing that third period in the first period and it seems like it takes Pete DeBoer so long to make the necessary adjustments. Plus, on top of that, I think Pittsburgh laid back a little bit in that third period, allowing San Jose to have a little bit more success. And that's the one thing you have to be leery about, because I think if I'm Mike Sullivan, I go in the locker room and say, look, we've outplayed these guys, but the one thing that we have to be concerned with is the fact that I think that we got a little lackadaisical in the third period. So everybody, when they go to the window, they always think, well, what kind of adjustments is the team that loses, what kind of adjustments are they going to make? And they never think about, well, what kind of adjustments are the team that is the team that won, what kind of adjustments are they going to make? And so you have to kind of factor those two things in, where most people only factor the one thing in.
Well, when they go to game three, obviously San Jose has last change. One thing that I think they do need to adjust and correct, and I'm not sure if they can, they were the last place faceoff team in the league in the regular season, and they've lost that battle both games in Pittsburgh. Is there an adjustment they can make center-wise to start winning more of the – especially defensive zone faceoffs? I feel that's where San Jose has been really losing the battle when they get their first and second unit on the ice. The Pittsburgh centermen have just been dominating the faceoff dot. And when you throw your – obviously, you know, when you throw your first two lines out, you're trying to get them down into the offensive zone. And if you just lose consistently in your defensive zone, they're going to be chasing the puck, and they're not going to have the legs come third period. Although we did say in the game two, the third period, they were attacking more. But I think the possession's totally been driven by Pittsburgh. I'm wondering what specific matchups – DeVore can do in that faceoff circle to just drive possession more into his team's corner of the ice?
Well, that's a million-dollar question because this is the first time that Joel Pavelski is probably – I mean, if you go throughout the playoffs, I think he's dominated every centerman he's been up against. And I don't think – I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't think that has held true, especially in game two. And not only if you're – talking about the Penguins, I mean, not only is Crosby fantastic, although they have accused him of cheating in the faceoff circle, but, you know, you have a guy like Cullen that's also won a ton of faceoffs as well. So it's a very difficult matchup because if you're Pete DeBoer, I don't know where else you go. Maybe Tierney, who's had a little bit of success, in game two, maybe that's more of your go-to guy, but I think you kind of live and die with a guy that got you there, and Joel Pavelski just is not winning enough faceoffs. And I've said 1,000 times, you know, you show me the Stanley Cup winner, and I'll show you the one that's won the majority of the faceoffs, is better on special teams, and is the deeper team. And right now, that's Pittsburgh.
Another thing I was thinking about, I want to get to some Vegas Wants Hockey hashtag talk as well.
Me
here
too.
In a little bit. we got about 12 minutes, but one thing, and I've seen the Sharks a lot out west, and not as much in Pittsburgh, obviously. But one thing about the Sharks, and I felt this is true over the years as well for St. Louis, when they try to play too physical of a game, it takes away from what their strengths are. And with the hit totals being 72 in game one and 79 in game two, I feel that San Jose might be trying to get into that physical mode that I think – I don't know
what
if they're not good at it.
What other options do they have?
No, they got to hit and they got to check and they got to try and slow down Pittsburgh. But I think maybe if you do a little more of your own – and of course, it's easier said than done. But I think if they would do a little bit more concentrated on their breakouts and their speed game, which is what got them to the final, and a little bit less on the physicality, which I've always felt that them in St. Louis, the more physical they get, the less discipline they get in
yes.
within their structure. And I think that's cost them a little bit, like you said, at least the first two periods of both games. They might be a little loose running around trying to hit them and slow them down and not so much playing within their structure. And maybe moving back on home ice, they can get back more into their flow of the game. And maybe that's where there's still some value, is if they get their matchups they want in last change, then they'll be able to focus more on their speed game and less on their physicality, because I don't think that plays well for them. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I agree, and I certainly agree with your assessment of the St. Louis Blues, because that was the type of game that Ken Hitchcock's team was trying to play as well. And I guess when you can't match speed, you have to be more physical, and we see what Pittsburgh is doing. They have no problem bringing two or three forecheckers to stop your first pass out of your own defensive zone, and that's the one thing that San Jose has got to do better. They've got to get the puck off of their stick as quickly as possible and get it up ice, because, you know, if you can make that first pass, because Pittsburgh's been extremely aggressive, if you can make that first pass, then you have the advantage. You know, the puck is always going to go faster than the skaters, but, you know, Pittsburgh is almost, you know, again, equating it to basketball. They're almost trying to force you into that bad pass. And once you make that bad pass, they are off to the races with their speed. And I think that San Jose is, Obviously, they can't match them with speed, and I don't think San Jose can play the same game as Pittsburgh either because of their lack of speed as well. So I think they have to kind of go back more into the let's put a bunch of guys in the middle. I think it's the Islanders that does this really well. They put a bunch of guys in the middle. They keep teams to the perimeter. And as long as when they have possession of the puck, it's a complete, they span out and it's a breakout. I just don't think that they're going to be able to forecheck as hard as Pittsburgh is. And they're certainly afraid to pinch, because if they miss on the pinch, then they're certainly in a bad position. I just think Pittsburgh, as far as their options, have a ton more options available to them than what San Jose can counter with. That's my only issue with backing the Sharks in Game 3.
Chris, you got anything else you want to get to looking forward here in San Jose? Or?
Yeah, the one thing I will say about San Jose is I don't think we've come close to seeing their best game other than Martin Jones the way he is performing.
Right.
So
I would keep
that in mind. Obviously they know the deal. They're in desperation mode, and a wounded animal is a dangerous one. So I would also keep that in mind as well. And this has been a very, I keep banging this drum, but I'll say it again. I expected it last night, but it's been a very resilient team when the chips were down in these playoffs and they had to come up big. They have every step of the way. Now, this is probably the best opponent they've played, so you have to keep that in mind as well. But I would not write off the Sharks yet. The old expression in playoff series, you don't hit the panic button until you lose a home game. So they
right.
haven't lost a home game yet. I know they've been a great road team during the regular season and weren't good at home, but actually in the playoffs they've been a terrific home team. Good on the road, terrific at home during these playoffs. So I expect that crowd to be raucous, and they win Game 3 and the whole new ball game.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt. I agree with that. And that's why I back the Sharks. I expect them to have a fantastic effort at the SAP Center. But, again, it can't take them 30 minutes to get back into this game. And for the one thing that really bothers me is the ability for the Penguins to get into the offensive zone almost at will. And I think there has to – we could go back to physicality – there has to be something that San Jose does to stop that momentum, because it seems like every single time the Penguins go up the ice, it seems like they're poised to get a quality shot. And if you can't pinch on them and you're afraid to forecheck them with more than one guy, well, you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have a hard time containing them.
Well, all right, let's get a little Vegas hockey talk here. But right before the final started, we had Bettman come out and all but spell out that the announcement was going to be June 22nd. I know you guys at the Sin Bin have been saying that for quite a while now. I see everybody putting out tweets yesterday. Oh, special sources say done deal. I feel like most of these guys are reading your timeline because you guys have been saying it's a done deal for about 6 weeks now. And all these other quote insiders unquote have just broke the news yesterday that their special sources are saying it's a done deal to Vegas. Not as much talk about Quebec City right now. What was your take on the commissioner's thoughts there Monday?
Well, I can tell you this. I know a lot of these national reports are behind the eight ball when you read down about three or four paragraphs and, it says the team is expected to play at T-Mobile Arena. Well, no, they're not expected to. That is where they're going to play. Okay, there is no other options. Okay, so you're just – I don't know where you're getting this information from, but, obviously your finger's not on the pulse of what's going on. So as far as what Bettman said, it was really – hey, look, all I've ever wanted is a date. Give me something of substance. And
right.
I never wanted this – I don't think any of us wanted this to go a year. And I think that if, the NHL was – Bettman kind of rolls his eyes about, the word speculation. Well, geez, Gary, when we're left to speculate, because you won't give us anything, then that's what you're going to get. And whether or not it's right or wrong, that's what we have because we don't have anything of substance. And now we have something of substance. In fact, today it came out that they will be meeting Tuesday to, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's on this, and then the BOG meeting is going to be on the 22nd. So the executive committee was confirmed by a couple of my sources is going to meet on Tuesday. And in fact, Ken had also confirmed this as well. And so that's great news, and I can't believe that they would come to Las Vegas for their awards show only to say, hey, thanks for the attempt. We appreciate the $10 million, and now you don't get a team. I don't
know. What you just said was my initial response to when he said I expect to have more of a concrete statement to make on June 22nd in Las Vegas. You bet. If he put it this way, if he doesn't, if we don't get our team and he says it here in town, I hope he brings security. Because it's not going to be pretty. Pretty for him trying to get to the airport after that award show. If this is old school Vegas, talk about kneecaps and whatnot. That's not a pretty picture. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? You better have some security because that just doesn't make sense that you would do a PR move that way. It's kind of silly. So I think we're all on the same page that finally we'll have something of substance to talk about. I remember last year I was at one of the meet and greets that Mr. Foley was at down at, I think it was Suncoast Casino. And I asked him then, what can you do before the announcement to maintain the moment? Because if you remember a year ago when the first 10,000 or so season ticket reservations were being put down, the buzz in the city was palpable that we were finally going to be considered a major league sports city, yada, yada, yada. And I asked him, I said, what can you do in the interim to keep that momentum going that you've already achieved?
Great question.
And he asked, he said, what I want to do is I just want to continue to get into the community. I want to make very public anything that the NHL will allow me to say. And any progress that we make, I want to make sure I continue to engage the city and keep that energy going. Do you think, and not Bill Foley specifically, but do you think the Vegas Wants Hockey Group could have done more in the interim 12 months to maintain that momentum? Because I almost feel like it plateaued a little bit December, January, as the middle of the NHL season wore on, and it just kept getting longer and longer. Do you think I got that right? Am I kind of feeling that maybe the momentum plateaued a little while back? And if so, obviously the announcement is going to re-energize the whole thing, but what can they do going forward after the announcement to re-energize that fan base that we have here?
Oh, I think it's there. I just think in January and December when Bettman, you know, came out and said there was nothing to report, I think we were all hoping for something because keep in mind, I mean, we thought maybe there was going to be something in September and then it was December and then maybe in March at the GM meetings, which was great because then we did get to learn a little bit about how the expansion process was going to work. And I think people just got to the point like, you know, look, I put down money, my money that I went out and worked. Because I work for, because I believe in Foley, I believe in the National Hockey League, I believe in the fact that, you know, this is something that's important for the city, and now it's like, you know, if you would have told these people it had been a year before they would have heard back about how, you know, essentially they're all shareholders in this. We've all put our money into this, and we've certainly have all put our emotions into this. So I think after a while we were like, you know, we deserve an answer. And then it's kind of like, you know what, let me know when you're ready. Because I'm not going to continuously every day pour my emotion into this if you're just not going to tell me anything. And you know, I mean, things do get lost in the holidays, and there's a lot of other things going on. But believe me, when this thing gets announced, then it's game on. Because we can do anything. We could, you know, there's nothing we can't do to engage the public at this point. And believe me, I'm telling you, last night, I don't know if you saw my tweet, last night, no dog in the fight, Las Vegas, the Stanley Cup playoffs, was trending at number four on Twitter. Only Ottawa was the only Canadian National Hockey League city where the Stanley Cup final was trending. Okay? So you tell me where the interest is right now.
No, that I didn't see that. That's fantastic. That goes back to the article I wrote for you guys over at Tin Bin Vegas about how our TV ratings are a clear picture and indicator of how much interest there is in hockey in Las Vegas for all the naysayers and pundits or whatever. I didn't see that, but that's fantastic. That's awesome. Chris, you got one thing I wanted to get Chris in here, being the East Coast guy. And I think everybody kind of feels this way. And our apologies to our friends in Quebec City. We've met a lot of great people in Quebec and all over Canada, obviously. And a lot of naysayers as well that say that we're a joke and blah, blah, blah. But I'm pretty much over trying to debate them. Although I did take Shannon Sharp on last night on Twitter. If you want to, I don't know if you saw that, but he put a tweet out that it was about football, but it's the same statement as they've been making all along, is that Vegas doesn't have disposable income. They're all going to be in casinos. Nobody's going to the game. So I hammered him with a couple of Business Journal quotes that we're rated at 100% capacity with our disposable income to support an NFL team and also an NHL team at the same time. And so I went a little bit all in good fun, but
listen though,
go ahead.
A year ago, if you go back to my Twitter feed a year ago, I spent my whole morning fighting Canada, fighting the East Coast.
You and me both, sir. You and me both.
Every single morning. And so, listen, and so that has gone down to nothing. And why has it gone down to literally nothing? Is because now we've taken the time to educate people. We've educated people in the NHL, and we'll educate people in the NFL if they come.
Yep, there you go. So if they do in fact hold Quebec City in reserve for a Carolina or I don't know, maybe a New Jersey, everyone doesn't ever mention that New Jersey is always in the bottom five in attendance as well. Because they got cold weather there, so they're still a hockey town. But
been in the bottom of the league for 15 straight years.
Correct, sir. But they never get mentioned almost even behind the scenes had to take a few hundred million from the league in order to avoid bankruptcy. But because it's cold there, they're okay. They get a pass. Or maybe if the Arizona lease runs out. Chris, they do not announce that both Quebec City and Las Vegas are getting a team. How do they play that immediately PR-wise? Because that's obviously going to alienate quite a lot and let's face it, Canada's a great country. They've got great, fantastic hockey fans. They probably know the game better than anybody else in the world. You got to grow the game. And if you put the team in Quebec City right away, you're not going to engage any new fans. How do they spin that, Chris? What's your opinion on how that's going to go down?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough spin because I do believe Quebec City is going to get become part of the NHL in the new future. I actually have a new article coming up, hopefully tomorrow morning at Last Word on Sports about this, about the Carolina Hurricanes and how they might have put the final nail in the coffin with Quebec City in terms of their expansion bid and everything that they're going through with the latest news this week of Peter Karamanos, the owner of the Hurricanes, being sued by his three adult sons for failure on defaulting on paying back the loan on his son's trust. So, you know, in the one breath, you know, they're not going to say, well, Quebec City, you know, everyone relax, in 2 years' time, you'll get the Hurricanes, you'll get this team or that team, because that's not how it's done. So they're going to have to find creative ways to kind of mend fences. I mean, the good news for the NHL is maybe quietly through sources and stuff, they, you know, get the word out, like, look, Quebec City is still high on our radar, and, you know, we can see it happening in the, you know, sometime in the near future. I do believe, and then I wouldn't be shocked if come the 2017-18 season, Las Vegas, when they start up, is going to be in the West, and the Quebec Nordiques will be back in the league in the East. And unfortunately for our friends and diehard hockey fans in Carolina, they'll no longer be a team. So that's a tricky one, though, from a PR standpoint, how to navigate all those waters. And, you know, I understand what you guys were saying about the Devils, although they have a new building, and I know they have a new owner and all that. There is no team currently at the state of where Carolina is at, from my understanding. So that is the biggest concern on a lot of levels. And I would even say this, if you put a Bill Foley in Carolina to navigate that ship, I still don't know if it would work down there. It's going to be tough sledding, to say the least.
One thing, Dana, on Monday that he did use was the word defer. We're all obviously hoping that applies to Quebec City and not us. Is that kind of what you think he put that caveat in for, maybe? Was he'll use the defer the decision on Quebec City until they do a little more homework? Is that one way they can spin it, you think?
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, look, for me, it was never this was a big problem when Seattle was not involved in this, because I think originally Gary Bettman, or at least if you use common sense on this, I think Gary Bettman would have loved just a nice, easy Vegas-Seattle expansion, Vegas one
year,
Seattle the next, Carolina the Quebec, and it's all nice and easy. So, but
yep.
Then when Seattle decided not to get involved in this because they're hell bent on getting an NBA arena and that's what they want, and then the NHL would be a nice, you know, a follow up to that, but certainly not the reason they're going to build an arena. And you could definitely see when Gary Bettman talks about Seattle, he's a little peeved about Seattle because he spent a lot of time going up there trying to push this thing through, and then last August they decided not to take part in the expansion, you know, process as far as putting an application in. But yeah, for sure. If you live in Quebec, you gotta be disappointed for sure. But then there's something in the back of your head that says, you know, this is a little bit better, because let's not forget. Not only do you have to pay a $500 million expansion fee, oh, by the way, it's paid in American dollars, so you're up around $670, $680 at that point. I'm just guessing at that with the math, but it's higher. And then all the cost that goes into actually establishing your minor league system and, you know, all the things that go into actually establishing your organization, that's a lot of money. And I'll tell you, it would be a lot less money to pay a relocation fee than it would an expansion fee. And you know, we've already seen that Quebecor is already trying to, you know, more than willing to get in, take in new partners. You know, I obviously they could flip the bill on this, but I obviously also think that they're more than willing to not have the whole burden as well. So I think the monkey wrench in this was thrown in when Seattle decided not to take part.
No, I agree 100%.
If I can make a quick point on Seattle in terms of Bettman, well, Bettman also has, Mr. Bettman, he has to realize that, you know, he could be ticked off at Seattle or the city council, whatnot, but at the end of the day, say what you want about Quebec, pros or cons, Quebec City, but one thing's for certain, they have an ownership group that is trying to do everything they can to make it happen, just like Las Vegas does. We can't say that about Seattle. And obviously there is no state-of-the-art arena ready at the ready like those other two cities. So, be that as it may, you have to have an ownership group who is dedicated to this, both short and long-term, and no one has stepped up. Even in Seattle, the Hansen Group that we've mentioned in the past, all indications are, you know, first and foremost is the NBA. And then it's like, well, if you're going to have the arena, why wouldn't you then add hockey onto it? Only makes sense at that point. But their first and foremost seems to be more about basketball than the NHL. So, you know, you have
for
to
sure,
have, yeah. You know, the old – yeah, so you know, the old expression, you have to bring the horse to water. You know, you can only bring the horse to water, you can't make a drink. Well, Bettman first has to bring the horse to the water. He hasn't done that.
Well, not only that, I mean, and it's understandable as well, because there are still people in that city that are bitter about what happened with the Sonics. It is an absolute bitter pill that probably should not have happened. And it was, you know, if I'm a person in Seattle who's a huge Sonics fan, I'm like, you know, David Stern did absolutely nothing to try to keep our team in town, but yet he's bent over backwards to try to keep the Kings in Sacramento. Done everything he possibly could to keep them from moving. And so what was, you know, he couldn't wait to take our team away. So I think that there's that void and that empty spot that they are want to fill basketball-wise. Nobody living there right now, or very few, remembers professional hockey in Seattle. So they're like, okay, you know, I mean, we got the Thunderbirds, we're good to go. And, you know, but that Sonic memory, that's the bitter pill. And even if you look at the language of them trying to get this approved, it was NBA arena. There was nothing in there that says NHL. So they clearly were focused only on the NBA.
For sure. Not too many people remember that the Seattle franchise, they were the first American team to have their name written on the Stanley Cup. So there is a history of hockey up there, but it's a long time ago.
Yeah,
let me get it back to the on the
ice. I know the minor league teams do very well, though.
For sure. They have two, a junior and a minor league, and I was looking at our friends up there, Seattle Sin Bin, and I believe they each draw around 10,000 or so per game. So there's obviously it's a perfect footprint to put them up there. They've got their built-in rival with Vancouver. If they had had both Vegas and Seattle with their ducks in a row, you could have balanced the Western Conference with the Eastern Conference as far as number of teams in each side, and it would have been a pretty picture. Even at one point there, I think there was three groups. There was some mysterious Belleville group, there was the Tukwila Arena project, and then the Soto project downtown. And at one point, we were thinking, going back and forth with our friends up there, they may get as many as three people with a satisfactory application that the league was going to have to consider. And then when the deadline came and went and they've got none out of Seattle, that was a blindside. That was not to be expected. And I think it's taken a while to come up with another plan, to be honest with you. I think they did not have the plan B in place to say, well, okay, if Seattle doesn't put in, where do we go here? You know, put pieces in other, you know, square pegs and square holes and dot your I's to have a plan B if that didn't happen. I think it's taken a long time for the league to recover from that, personally. Let me get back onto the ice. We only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask the style they've seen here in the Stanley Final. You know that. If something works for a group of a team or a team else in the league, it's the same thing. What does the speed hybrid physical game do? Maybe the bulk of the heavy, quote, the checking, the physical teams out west, like the Kings, the Ducks, the St. Louis Blues, not so much because I thought they could play a physical game, but they definitely have speed and skill to go with that. Do they all have to recharge the Kings that they've taken the C off Dustin Brown? That could signal a new direction for that franchise. Do you see those heavy teams in the West playing keep up with the Joneses now if Pittsburgh does go on and win the Stanley Cup final? Do you think there's going to be some copycat in that?
For sure. I think that with the way I don't think every team, you know, I think you have some heavy teams out east too. I think,
Boston.
Yeah, but then Lucic came to mind, and I thought, well, not so heavy anymore to me. They're certainly not as physical as they were, and I've heard other people around the league say that. So, you know, that is a definitive factor. But I think he even could condense it down to the Pacific Division. I mean, that's your heavy division, and unless they all do it, I think the idea is you know, obviously to win that division. So I don't think there's going to be too much of a change there. But, you know, certainly we see where speed wins. But at the same time, though, I don't think it's just speed, because I think Pittsburgh is for a team that's considered a speed team, I think they're pretty physical. I mean, they hit when they need to. So I think that there needs to be a good mix. I don't know if there's a big mix with L.A., certainly with Anaheim, and they're so defensive-oriented. I mean, I've said this all along. I mean, one of my coworkers on Sinbin.Vegas was all so high about the Ducks, and I'm like, look, who's going to score goals? You know, you got great defense and pretty good goaltending, and then we've heard, well, you know, certainly we'll get one of the two goaltenders here in Vegas, and that would be fantastic. And I'm like, well, okay, so you want to play that style of hockey, because I just don't think that either one of them is going to be somebody that's going to stop 30 to 35 shots a night if you're going to play wide-open hockey.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you, too, I was looking at the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, and you look at those eight goaltenders, when you go Bishop Vasilevskiy, Marc-Andre Fleury, mm-hmm. Matt Murray, Jake Allen, Brian Elliott, Martin Jones, obviously I believe he'll be the protected one there, but they've got Optimus Ryan from Toronto. What do you think the odds are, if you had to put a number on it, that at least one of those eight goaltenders is on the roster opening night of Vegas?
Oh, I think it's a great – I think the odds are pretty even, actually.
I think you have to go even money, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, I think when you look for a goaltender, you look no further than Pittsburgh or Tampa Bay or Anaheim or St. Louis even. I think that those are the organizations right now that I'd be looking at. I know I wouldn't be looking at Montreal. So,
right.
So that those are certainly your organizations that you would be looking for goaltenders at. But it is going to be very interesting this fall when all the rosters are said and done and everything has kind of trickled down a little bit. I am going to start that process of actually, you know, putting a numerical value on some of these guys and saying, you know, this is who we should definitely target. But, you know, I appreciate all the work that people have done with all this. But, you know, we heard some variations now of what the expansion draft is going to be like. You no longer have to protect a certain percentage of your payroll, and there's going to be some tweaks. So until I know exactly who the players will be involved in a possible expansion process or expansion draft, I'm just not going to take the time to do it yet. But certainly I'm going to start with goaltenders, and it's certainly in the back of my mind all those guys. You might see some wheeling and dealing, too. You might see Pittsburgh say, look, we're going to give you X if you don't go after Matt Murray. You know, that sort of thing might happen as well.
Well, one thing that Chris had mentioned is the announcement being the 22nd and the draft soon to follow. I think the draft day dealings in response to the expansion draft next year, I think all of those machinations and dealings and wheelings are going to start taking place at this year's draft. I mean, if you take the Tampa Bay goalie situation, you have a Vezina Trophy finalist in Bishop this year. He's going to be a UFA in 2017. Your decision to protect Vasilevskiy or Bishop has to be made this year. Either decide to sign Bishop to the long-term deal and go ahead and expose Vasilevskiy, or it doesn't make any sense to keep Bishop any longer. You're already going to lose Stamkos. You might as well let your kid goaltender, who's proven to me anyway that he's a very athletic stud. He might need to tweak just a little bit on his positioning when he comes away from the painted area in the crease. But if that's your future and you're retooling away from Stamkos and you know you're up against salary cap, I know Chris is big on the salary cap deals. You got to re-sign quite a few of their young skilled forwards. They may just, if you see Bishop move, we could sooner rather than later, don't you think, Chris?
Yeah, Bishop's a free agent after next year, so theoretically speaking, what Tampa could do if they wanted to keep both is they could just, you know, not sign Bishop, have him play out next year, becomes UFA, I don't know the rules, how the rules will play out in terms of UFAs. I wouldn't imagine that you would have to protect a UFA or that you could take one. But even if they did take him, take Bishop at that point, he'd be a free agent in a short period of time. And then Tampa could re-sign him on July 1st. But
I'd be screaming collusion, bro. Would be screaming collusion.
Right. Well, he'll be a free agent at that point. So, having said all that,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So, having said all that, and I have written about this a recent article last week at Last Word on Sports. People check it out about the Blues and the Lightning. And Tampa is probably in the worst shape cap wise in the league. Basically, every core player is going to be a UFA or an RFA between this summer and next summer, and everyone's going to get gigantic raises. It's not just about Stamkos and Bishop. So I would be willing to bet money that Ben Bishop gets moved this summer, maybe to a Calgary for some chips back, be that what it may, and they'll go with Vasilevskiy and then make a move for a veteran goalie to kind of back up Vasilevskiy. They're going to have to make moves like that. Simply put, everyone thinks, well, if Stamkos leaves, doesn't that give them a world of cap space? Victor Hedman is a UFA after next season. His current cap number is $4 million. On the open market, he would get $9 million in his sleep, given his age. That's a $5 million. Just for Hedman alone, that's a $5 million increase. Stamkos' cap number is currently at 7.5. So basically,
right,
in a year's time, of that 7.5, two-thirds of it is going to have to be used on Hedman alone. That's just to cover Hedman. And maybe that can cover another player. But they still have a long way to go in terms of their cap. So I don't see a scenario when both – and Vasilevskiy's an RFA after next season. So he's going to get a nice bump up from his $900,000 salary as well. So I don't see both of them being able to afford in an NHL cap world both those goalies. So, and keep in mind the other teams real quick that you mentioned, Brian Elliott's just like Bishop. He's a UFA after next year. So St. Louis, theoretically speaking, could protect Jake Allen. Brian Elliott will then, you know, go to free agency. I think he'll be 32 at that point. The Ducks are the ones kind of up against it a bit, but I wouldn't be surprised because of that. It forces their hand to trade Frederick Anderson this offseason, maybe to a Toronto or somebody like that. I can't imagine the Ducks would want to trade Anderson to the Flames, but, you know, to a Carolina or a Toronto. You know, obviously it's a lot easier for West teams to trade with the East than vice versa. So, like Dana said, you really have to see where the opening night rosters are on come next year. And even still, there can still be moves made between opening night and next year's trade deadline. But that will give you a better indication of where everything is at.
Well, they could do what Boston did and turn around and flip Martin Jones back to the Sharks. Thanks, Boston. Go ahead, Dana.
I know. Can you imagine next year's trade deadline? I mean, if you thought this year's had no activity or very little activity, next year's are going to be crazy, I anticipate.
For sure. Well, we're just about out of time here. Dana, thanks again, as always. I mean, I could sit here and talk hockey with you all day. I'm looking forward to seeing you. You're going to be down at the award show, right?
I certainly will.
Okay, well, I'll look you up when we get there. If you go online and go to Twitter at Dana Lynch, you can text PICS to 702-471-8777. And you'll receive today's Elite Play. If you're outside of Nevada, it's for informational purposes only. But for sure, if you're in Las Vegas and you're going to the window on a daily, you know, for a daily pick, you need to get it on Dana's text line and get his pick. I think he's at 60. What percentage are you going on that? Do you track that, Dana?
You know, it's tough too because I don't know if people don't like to hear that, but it's difficult too because sometimes we'll give out some prop bets because we like the way, like say a starting pitcher is throwing. We get some information about how he's throwing in the bullpen, and by information I mean we see it on Twitter. So nothing going bad, but you know. And then the other thing too, we give out some first period plays. So it's on a daily basis, it's difficult to continuously update that. But, you know, all we ask is basically say, look, you know, we're willing to put our hand out first, give you a play, and we're going to tell you to take it easy and take it slow because that's how you properly do things. And if you stay the course and stay with what we're doing, you know, you're going to find success.
100%. So, sir, I appreciate it. I will definitely be looking for you over there at the MGM. It's at the MGM, right?
It's at the Hard Rock.
That's right. They moved it this year. Okay. Well, I'll be looking for you at the Hard Rock, sir. Thank you again for joining us. Chris, you got anything else?
No, that's it. You know, I'm looking forward to game three, and I expect a big effort by the Sharks. I'm hoping so from a hockey fan perspective, because otherwise this could be pretty much good night and close out the lights kind of deal.
What? Let me put you on the spot real quick, Dana. Does Pittsburgh finish it off?
Well, I mean, it's hard to go against Pittsburgh. I don't know how you – I mean, you've had two shots to neutralize your speed, and I haven't heard or I haven't seen anything where you're able to do that, at least over a 60-minute game. For me, I mean, I took a shot on San Jose in game three, but certainly if they don't win game three, I don't want anything to do with them the rest of the way.
Okay, buddy. I know you're busy, sir. Catch Dana Lane on Twitter, at Dana Lane Sports. Make sure you follow – at Sinbin Vegas. That's the Twitter feed over there, right?
Yeah, it's Sinbin.Vegas.
Sinbin.Vegas, there you go.
Yeah, and it's at, well, and the Twitter feed is at Sinbin Vegas, and the website is Sinbin.Vegas.
Right. So make sure you guys, they're the in-depth Vegas podcast. If you guys want more strict Vegas content, you guys need to follow them as well as us. So they do a great job over there. They're good friends of us, and we consider them good friends to our show, and hopefully it's vice versa.
Yes,
I keep
sir.
Getting Dane on, so
of
they're
course.
Not upset with us yet.
All right. No, hey, look, I'm a volunteer, you know. I'm a free agent, so I can
– There you go.
Hey, look, any platform that I can get about Las Vegas and hockey, I'm on it. And I consider everybody friends, and everybody in this town, and everybody around the country that promotes this thing and wants this to happen, everybody is a friend, because we're all in it together, and we're all in it for one goal, is to get this team on the ice and get this team on winning some games and make this city proud.
Okay, buddy, I'm going to let you go. We got to wrap this up. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk again soon, man.
Okay, man. I appreciate your time. Thank you, as always.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good, buddy. We'll talk soon. Well, all right. Wrap up this segment of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I actually had to extend it twice to keep things rolling. I love the conversation we were having, so I couldn't bear to cut it loose, sir. I hope we didn't take up too much of your time today as well.
No, it's all good. Love talking hockey, Stanley Cup, and we got a lot of great shows coming up. We're starting the preparation on our big draft show. So, you know, people keep an eye out on that. We're looking at about a week or so out from the draft, give or take. But once we have the details, we'll pass that along to everyone as well.
10-4. Make sure you guys all follow Chris at the NL King on Twitter. And he'll link all his content there, but he writes for The Last Word on sports.com as well as thehockeywriters.com. So make sure you guys check out all of Chris's content over there. If you're an Islanders fan, especially go to thehockeywriters.com because he covers them exclusively. And with that, sir, I'm going to let you go, and we will talk again soon.
Sounds good.
Okay, buddy. And we're gone. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all